G'day and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC, so thank you very much to both of them. But if you may miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to Juliana Petrenko, who is doing a Master of Science in Biology under the supervision of Dr. Fran Bonnier. Welcome to Grad Chat, Juliana.
Hi, Colette. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show because I know you've been a bit under the weather, which happens at this time of year, unfortunately. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, we're all alive and kicking, which is nice. Now, one of the reasons I wanted Juliana on the show today was that I read one of the Queen's Gazette articles about some of the work that she's doing, and that was back in March, so it's taken me this long to get her on the show, and it was called about birds adapted, city living are still at risk, and with a tagline, a new study finds that urban tolerance isn't saving birds from population declines seen across North America. So backing up just a little bit, first of all, how did you feel about having an article about some of the work that you're doing? And then what made you get into this area of research? Because a Master of Science program is 2 years, which can go pretty fast.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of the article, it was really exciting I love my research area and I love getting to ask big, broad questions about biodiversity and how anthropogenic effects or human-caused changes impact biodiversity, because we are, as people, living beside nature and nature's organisms. So learning about how biodiversity changes in response to our own actions has always been really interesting to me. In terms of my Master's of Biology, the way that I went about choosing my supervisor was really focused on finding a supervisor that was working on what aligned with my research interests, and then finding a project that really inspired me. And so that's where this question came up. Most broadly, we're losing biodiversity at an alarming rate because of habitat loss, invasive species, pollution, climate change, urbanization, and a lot of other human-caused factors. But specifically in North America alone, we've lost around 3 billion individual birds since the 1970s.
Wow, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's absolutely incredible.
It's a really big number. It's surprising. But the what's also surprising is we don't always know why some species are more vulnerable to these declines than others. Mm-hmm. And
do you mind if we're jumping in? Is this a continuation, the study which we're going to talk about a little bit later, is this going to be a continuation of what you did in your undergrad? And is that what made you want to continue it because of what you did in undergrad?
So this actually is the project that I did in my undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm pursuing my master's with a different project, but because of the broadness and, you know, importance of this question, it was an analysis that we continued on in my master's and just polished my undergraduate work up to publish it now.
And you've had opportunities already to present your research.
Yes. So the finding of urban birds not being safer than non-urban birds is a pretty exciting and surprising result. Well, not so much exciting, but a very surprising result. So I had the opportunity to present my work at the British Ornithological Union Conference in Nottingham.
Wow, you got to go. Did you go to Nottingham?
Yes, that's where I was just returning from.
Well, that is brilliant. Not many people get that opportunity, and not with that particular group either.
Yeah.
The British Ornithological, I can never say that word, Society.
Yeah, so the conference was specifically about urban birds, which is what my lab studies. So actually a nice handful plus my supervisor went. So it was a really lovely experience to get to talk about such specific and, you know, personally my own interest related work.
So of course you would be giving the Canadian or North American context to this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the great things about bird data in North America is that there are long-term population trends and very long-term monitoring projects in North America, which we actually used in my work to answer this question.
And so with data collection, you mm-hmm. said there's lots of it. I mean, how far back are you talking? Because as we know, in the last few years with climate change and environmental changes, etc., I mean, things are changing so much faster than they used to. Something that mm-hmm. happened before was taking 50 to 100 years to make a difference. Mm-hmm. Now it's within 5 to 10 years. That's how dramatic changes are. So how far back is your data coming from?
So we have species range-wide population trajectories, which describe if a species is increasing or decreasing, since around the 1970s.
Okay, so it is from the 70s. So mm-hmm. that's a good 50 years. That's not bad to be looking into that.
Yeah, so for my data, we used 1993 and onward, just because it had an extended geographical area and there was better sampling. So we used a smaller period of time to answer our question.
Sorry, so what is your question? What question are you trying to see? Because, I mean, talking about urban ecology mm-hmm. in relation to bird species, mm-hmm. but what's the question you're wanting to answer?
Right. So our big broad question is, does urban tolerance predict a species population trajectory? Kind of like I mentioned before, we don't completely know all of the different reasons why one species is more vulnerable to decline than others. But urban tolerance specifically describes how well a species copes with cities, whether it avoids or tolerates a city. And the thing about urban tolerant species is city birds often have a broader environmental tolerance. So not only are urban birds usually better at dealing with cities, but they're also usually better at dealing with a wide range of conditions. So the rationale behind pollution, other kinds of habitat, you know, climate change, even just different resource availability, you know, they're more generalist species and, you know, will be less picky. Let's say you're going to Costco and the food stand, the urban tolerant species will take just about anything. Whereas a specialist species will be more particular and will only,
eat the pollen from a certain flower or something.
Yeah. So the rationale behind our study is urban tolerant species that cope well with cities might also cope well with other anthropogenic effects. So because of this, we predicted that urban avoidant species would be more in decline, whereas urban tolerant species would be stable or even increasing.
And so you're trying to prove if that is a correct statement.
Yeah, rather than prove, we want to know if there are relationships that support the hypothesis.
The hypothesis. Okay, we have to be careful when we're talking academia of how we make these comments, don't we? Mm-hmm. So, what can support the hypothesis, and what I can never say that word either, and what can't, mm-hmm. and all those bits and things. So, when you're talking about urban tolerant species, my first thought is it's the sparrows and the blackbirds and the crows. Are there other ones in there that we wouldn't normally think about? I mean, I can think of more exotic species which maybe wouldn't do well in urban areas, but which mm-hmm. kind of species have you been looking at? Because, I mean, there are a lot.
Right. So we actually looked at 397 total species.
Okay. Well, that's a lot. There's a lot more than I thought. Yeah. I don't remember seeing all those 390-odd in my backyard.
No, not at all. But, and so each of those 397 species has a different urban tolerance associated with it, because urban tolerant, you know, you can't just split it up either like cities or dislike cities. Each species really falls on a scale, on a gradient of how much it likes or dislikes a city. Some examples of really urban tolerant species are your classic blue jay. Everyone, okay, yep. You know that one. Yeah, there's also the European starling, which actually isn't native to North America, but it's that little black bird with a yellow beak that you can hear chittering about.
I see it at times.
Yeah, and like, yes, it's true. They're very vocal. Then you have the house sparrow. So yeah, that's that little brown sparrow that you see everywhere. And then other species could include the house finch or the chimney swift. Those are around as well. So those are some examples of pretty urban tolerant species. One that kind of falls in the middle is the bald eagle. It's a little less.
Really? I wouldn't have thought that, other than seeing going out to Bath on the road there in the big nests in the, mm-hmm, in the pylons.
Yeah, so they kind of fall in between, whereas some urban avoidant species could include owls, for example.
Right, which would be more, you would assume, to be more in rural areas, or at least where there's lots of fields and things.
Mm-hmm. So it really does, mm-hmm, it really does fall on a scale. And so we took those trajectories and paired them with that urban tolerance measure to see what the relationship was between how a species is increasing or decreasing and how urban tolerant or avoidant it is.
This word urban tolerance, mm-hmm, I find intriguing because, mm-hmm, there's so many variables that you could, right, be putting in your data. I mean, not just landscape, mm-hmm, but temperatures, mm-hmm, rainfall, you know, all those things must come into play. How much green space is in a particular urban environment? How much just block buildings are around? I mean, do you take all these sorts of things into consideration?
Right. So urban tolerance, how it's kind of defined in terms of a measure, is that a species is found more often in urban environments compared to non-urban environments across, okay, its range. So it kind of wraps all those variables in it and looks at where a species prefers to be and where it is found more. This measure is usually calculated for the breeding season, just because the breeding season is a more challenging time for a species because it's,
right,
producing and rearing young. So if a species can survive and persist and raise children offspring in a city, then it's a pretty urban tolerant species because it's able to do this really challenging process in a challenging environment. And so it's considered urban tolerant. But some of the traits of urban tolerant species include that they are more behaviorally flexible. They, right, usually have larger brains, and they actually have altered endocrine responses, which can be kind of nitty gritty particular based on age and sex of the bird. But so they have they have these different characteristics which allow them to persist in urban environments.
How much does migration have a play a part in this? Because, you know, the geese used to fly south all the, mm-hmm, in winter time, and they're not doing that as much. I mean, they're sticking around now, not many. Mm-hmm. Has that played a part as also within this?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know as much about the relationship between migratory status and urban tolerance. I'm not sure, but it is in terms of, you know, something speculative that I could suggest is that when resources are available for a longer duration during the year, a migratory species might have less reason to migrate if they can find the resources around.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, this, as we keep saying, and fortunately with academia or research, all those external variables can really put a spanner in the works at times for what you're trying to prove or not prove, mm-hmm, doesn't it?
Yeah, so the thing is, urban tolerance is calculated during the breeding season, which doesn't, yeah, take migration into account.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that you've got a specific point that you look at, because that would be, if not, it would be, well, who knows? I mean, because then all the other things come into play, doesn't that? So that makes sense, looking at the breeding times.
Yeah, science is all about looking at those specific relationships.
So with what you're doing right now, you know, you can look at the different species, but how does the extent to which a species likes a city impact its population trajectory? Because you're saying in your hypothesis, it's not necessarily what you thought.
Yeah, so we expected that urban avoidance species would decline because they're so picky, and urban avoidance species would be stable or increasing because they're so good at dealing with a wide range of challenges. But when we completed our analysis, we found that urban tolerance as and population trend have absolutely no relationship. City birds are not safer. Urban tolerant species were as likely to be declining or increasing as urban avoidant species, which was definitely a surprise.
And why do you think that is?
So we can take a look at the specific species that are determining this trend. So broadly, when we look at urban tolerant species, there are a fair bit that are increasing and that are doing well. But we think that some of those urban tolerant species, which are in decline, are often because of the challenges that are acting alongside urbanization and are kind of compounded and made worse. So for example, the chimney swift is an urban tolerant species, but it's in decline. And what's interesting about the chimney swift is it is an aerial insectivore, which means that it eats flying insects. But because
of abundance of those right now,
actually, no, aerial insectivores as a group aren't doing super well because the amount of flying insects is reduced when there's a lot of rain and some, you know, extreme climate events. So, which is a result of climate change. And so, or the climate crisis. And so with less flying insects, the chimney swifts are in decline. We also see other urban tolerant species like the house sparrow, that brown one that I mentioned that you see everywhere. The house sparrow is in massive decline, and that's something that people don't typically expect because we see so much of them. Mm-hmm. But when you have such a big population, even big declines aren't as intuitive, you know, to spot as you'd think because we still so see so many around. So, but those house sparrows are in decline. And another species is the American goldfinch. That's a beautiful yellow bird in decline. The blue jay and the European starling, like we talked about before, those are also in decline.
Is that right?
But, yeah. So
is there a correlation just from the first one you talked about? Is there a correlation to some of this decline with a decline in the food source? I mean, yeah. they can handle everything else around, but if they can't get the food.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which, yes. So the reason that the chimney swifts are declining is primarily because of their diet. Another species is the house finch, which is in decline because of the spread of kind of bacteria and disease. The house finch is an urban tolerant species, and they feed at a lot of bird feeders that are in urban environments. So And those are places where there's a high density of birds and there's a lot of transfer of disease there. So that's, you know, those urban bird feeders are something that allows them to persist, but the transfer of disease here is amplified. So the urban environment is contributing to their decline. So there are parts of urban environments that urban tolerant species can make use of, but there are some challenges that they can't get past. So that's probably causing the majority of urban tolerant species declines.
In the data that you've been looking through, mm-hmm. has it shown for certain species, you know, an increase, a decrease, an increase, a thing? Because there are going to be times when, if I, for instance, look up the food source, where food is in more abundance, etc. Mm-hmm. And then there's other times, well, maybe not. So it's almost like a natural selection, the survival of the fittest. The stronger ones keep the breed, the species going, hopefully enough of them not to sort of become extinct. So have you seen in certain species in the data this ebb and flow of numbers? And does it correlate to certain things that have happened in those areas?
So no trend is completely linear. Species do have that up and down. Because we looked at it from between 1993 to 2019, we saw plenty of ups and downs within each of those species trends. But for our purposes, we took the average trajectory of those years just to get a clear snapshot of what's going on with the species across its range, across the duration of the time period. I'm sure that if we looked at every single species, every single 397 of the species trajectories throughout those years, we would be able to pinpoint or take a, at least see what's going on in those years. But that's a lot of, when we're interested in a broad answer, you know, seeing a broad trend and seeing those biggest dips and increases can tell us a lot about what challenges the species are experiencing most.
Because I would think it'd also be interesting to see, look at one species, say, here in Kingston versus one down in somewhere in mid-America or mm-hmm. something like that, one on a coastal, in a coastal area, to see in the same timeline what's happened with the various populations.
Yeah, it would definitely be nice and interesting to get to know a species on that level. But for the purposes of our work, we wanted a really broad relationship between the trend and urban tolerance.
So what do you think then is the biggest takeaway from your research so far?
When you look at our result, knowing that city birds aren't safer kind of seems like a bad thing, because you're thinking, oh, the species that are most suited to persisting past all of these challenges aren't safe. Yes, we expected that species that love cities would be doing better, but our results show that they aren't guaranteed protection, as they were just as likely to be increasing or declining as birds that completely avoid cities. But at the same time, interpreting the result in a more positive light, species which avoid cities entirely aren't necessarily doomed, which is a very, very encouraging result.
And I guess we haven't talked that much about those that aren't in the cities.
Mm-hmm. Which are equally as interesting, because we expected those urban avoidant species to be, you know, decimated, but some of them are actually doing quite well.
And which ones, I mean, there are some examples there that we might all know.
Mm-hmm. So one of them is the red cockaded woodpecker.
I've seen those in my backyard.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what they are. I've got some big ones with the red head and then some smaller ones look exactly the same, but smaller.
Perhaps. I only know a couple of woodpecker species, but the red-headed woodpecker, or maybe the pileated. Maybe the pileated woodpecker is what you're thinking of. I don't think the redheaded is in this range, but that's I would have to look at a guidebook. But
I'll have to take a snapshot and send it to you.
I would love to see it. So the red cockaded woodpecker is a species that is urban avoidant and increasing because of human intervention to give them more nesting spaces and more cavities to nest in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And similarly, the bufflehead is another species. It's a species of duck, which has been increasing, and it's likely doing a lot better because of the protections on wetland and wetland management.
Mm-hmm. So this all comes into the kind of implications conservation can have on mm-hmm. these various species.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit more about that, because I mean, I hope you're wanting to, you know, hear some results, but mm-hmm. hopefully you want someone to do something with it.
Yeah. So what's really interesting is our populations of wetland birds used to be quite low, and it's because there was a lot of hunting that was going on. But right. The reason that they actually rebounded was because these hunters noticed that the populations were growing much smaller. And so the wetland conservation was largely a result of citizens saying, hey, there's a problem and this has to be fixed. So, and also in terms of conservation efforts, so DDT was this pesticide that was placed on lawns just to control
weeds and things.
Yes. And DDT was quite toxic to birds because when birds would reproduce, the presence of DDT would make their eggshells a lot softer. So a lot of the young would not, reproduction slowed very much. But since the ban of DDT, we've seen a lot of raptors coming, populations rebounding, like the bald eagle and the osprey. Thanks to the less DDT, those are species which are more urban tolerant, but increasing thanks to that conservation effort. So what we do see is across the board, human intervention is playing a role in the conservation of a lot of these species, although at the same time, it is also causing many declines, like with the house sparrow.
And is this some of the information that you, or reports that you could be giving to various city councils, right? Because, I mean, we're very lucky here in Kingston. We have so much green space. We have got the lake on our shores, and then we've got so many parks and reserves and wetlands. Mm-hmm. So we're very fortunate here. But there are other urban areas that aren't as lucky as we are. But is this something that we should be giving to urban planners and saying, you know, people want to see nature and around it because it's so much more calming for us too. Mm-hmm. And we need to protect some of these species. Have you thought about putting more green spaces and what have you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, so it's a little bit out of my scope because when we look at this result, we set out to determine if urban tolerance was a factor in impacting population trend. And we found that it isn't. Urban tolerance is now something that we can kind of check off that list of urban tolerance won't tell us whether a species is persisting or in decline. But investigating, which honestly is a really, it's a massive finding because when some people will look at a negative result, aka one that has no relationship like this, and think, oh, it's a negative, you know, we found no relationship, it doesn't mean anything. But it's a really important piece of the puzzle because we now know, wow, urban tolerance isn't a reason. And this allows us to ask more questions about what the reasons are that actually are impacting species population trends. So continuing to look at the factors that could be, you know, making one species more vulnerable to decline than another. And we know many species are vulnerable because of these massive declines. Finding out the specific reasons that make one species more vulnerable than another is what would be really important information for conservationists and, you know, potentially urban planners, who knows how it interacts with urban environments. This information is what would be really impactful to making, directing specific conservation efforts to the species which we know are vulnerable.
I mean, like you said, that you've learned so much from this data set that you've got. You've broken a bit of a myth. And then, as you said, you've checked something off that now no one else needs to go and check. Now let's look at the next part of the puzzle, so to speak. So you've done some amazing work in a very short time. So I really do appreciate you letting us into that, because I know we see birds around, and I, like I said, I love seeing the birds and animals around me, and the woodpecker, whichever one it is, he is quite beautiful. And the, you know, I've got cardinals coming in my backyard now, and of course the robins and things like that. So it's wonderful to hear how these species are coping with whichever environment they're living in. So I think that's the big thing there. So, Juliana, thank you so much for helping me and our listeners understand this whole area of urban ecology and looking at birds in this particular instance.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to explain. Is there time to leave with a couple action items?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
what do we need people to do?
Yeah. As we know, the biodiversity crisis is real and it is causing massive declines. And a lot of times people can think, what can I do? Well, good news. We live in urban environments often, and there are ways that you can make your own urban green space more biodiversity friendly. You can plant native plants to your region, do a little bit of research, look at what plants are native to your particular urban green space and plant those. It's important for native biodiversity. Mm-hmm. You can also go a little bit longer without mowing your lawn. That does the same. Yeah, that's, it, you know, just add a couple extra days, makes a massive difference. And keep your cats indoors for the birds.
Yes, absolutely. Well, all dogs, because sometimes dogs, my dog likes to chase anything.
So oh, no.
I'm trying to stop him from doing that. I give them plenty of warning before I let him out the back door. Yeah. It's like, run, rabbit, run. No.
See yourself.
Yeah. So, but no, they're all really good things. I mean, it's, and simple things for us to help. To help this, I'll keep in mind. I mean, luckily we only mow our lawn once a week, but maybe we can make it once a fortnight if it doesn't get too long. So, Juliana, again, thank you for coming on the show. Best wishes for whatever next steps you're doing, and I appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
Thank you so much, Colette.
So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. And don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcasts. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.